Jeremy, how was your cup?
It was trying, I think would be the right word for it. Wasn't a success in the handicapping world, and it certainly didn't have the good feelies at the end of it as well. So I would say a trying Breeders' Cup for sure, and one that you try to learn your lessons from and do it better the next time.
Well, I drive that message home, not just for Breeders' Cup. I mean, it's true. You know, it's true anytime. We had a great weekend of racing that ended yesterday, particularly in New York. I just talked about it with Andy in the last hour. And you know, you can learn and improve your approach to the game at any time. But the one thing that always seems to be true about Breeders' Cup is that you really only have to find one, maybe two horses, or make one or two bets that prove out, and invariably you're well served sticking with an approach that says, you know, this is the horse that I think could run well in this spot, and I'm going to build around it. There's going to be bad trips. There's going to be surprises about how the races were run. Look at the mile. The mile didn't look to have any pace. Next thing you know, it's got pace. So things are going to happen, but it does remain 2 days where if you happen to be right and things fall into place, you get paid. And it's not an indictment of your approach when it doesn't happen.
No, that's for sure. I mean, look, hey, we're all trying to look in a crystal ball and predict the future. And in most races that you handicap, that means there are maybe 3-4 good options in most horse races. You know, we average 8 in the field, if that, nowadays. So when you put a Breeders' Cup together and you've got 7, 8, 9 good options in a race, I mean, it really ups the level of difficulty to hitting it. So you do have to have, you know, one or two really good ones. You know, I took my shot with KP Dreamin' and the Juvenile Fillies. I mean, right idea, completely wrong horse and didn't fire at all. But when they come home 28 seconds in the fourth quarter of a mile and a 16th race, you figure if I've got the only horse on paper who looked like she could close it all, maybe you would get a little run, and she never picked up a hoof, you know. So your play of the day, you're looking at a 30-1 shot on opening day. You say, look, this is a big shot in the cup to take a swing. The race sets up exactly like you think it might, and the two favorites run 1-2 anyway, even though they crawled home, you know. So sometimes you kind of see it right, but you don't, you don't put all the colors together in the rainbow, and it just doesn't quite work out for you. And that's kind of the deal. And, you know, in the other horse for me that I needed to have a good weekend would have been Dawn the Destroyer in the Filly and Mare Sprint. Loved the TCA as a prep for the Filly and Mare Sprint. Thought the Keeneland Fall Meet would have a lot of success. She looked like a closer in a race where I thought, you know, Come Dancing, Confessi, some of the others, a lot of speed in there. We can get her to, you know, really make a run. And, you know, she ran well to run third, but didn't get there. The Keeneland horses did really well. You know, that was gratifying to see following that meet so close. You know, British Idiom, Uni, Blue Prize, all winning races. You know, Dawn the Destroyer ran a good third. Vasilika ran a good second. And Whitmore ran his race again in the sprint. You know, he's just a tough old sucker that you really root for. So, you know, there's, what, 6 horses from Keeneland in a 4-week meet. And really, not 4 weeks. We're talking 1 weekend. 6 horses came out of 1 weekend and hit the board in the Breeders' Cup, including 3 winners. So really, really good results from the Keeneland runners. And a good Breeders' Cup Friday, for sure, for the Mid-Atlantic, you know, where I'm from and followed the racing my whole life. It's rewarding to see Sharing Win out of Laurel and Four-Wheel Drive coming up out of Colonial via Belmont, you know. So the Mid-Atlantic had a nice Breeders' Cup where, you know, often quiet at Breeders' Cup time for that circuit. And things are looking better in that area, at least, and that's good. So Keeneland, the Mid-Atlantic, certainly had great days. Chad Brown wins 3 races at the Breeders' Cup. You say, well, yeah, no kidding, duh. But of those 3, if you'd have told me at the beginning, they wouldn't be the Juvenile Fillies turf or the Filly and Mare turf. That's the 2 races he's dominated in the history of the Breeders'
Cup. That's true.
So he comes away with 3 wins and 2 not in the, you know, not in the 2 divisions where he's been so dominant. So where, you know, I took Chad on top in the 2 races where he's been dominant, and he wins 3 other divisions that, you know, that haven't been his strongest suit. Certainly, I think that the bricks and mortar, you know, was absolutely legitimate in such a great year. Uni the same way. I mean, he's had a really, really good year. And that wasn't a world-class field in the Breeders' Cup Mile. It was down by historical standards. And the two fillies from America ran their races. Cassie's filly ran really good, too. Got Stormy. So, you know, and then you look at a Breeders' Cup where Mottoli had no reason at all to run down Chancelot. He should have been gone. And he was still good enough to do it. It really underscores how good of a year and how good of a horse he is. That was one of those. Nobody did the dirty work for him. He had to do all the reeling in himself, and he pulled in a tough horse and caught him at the wire. And you know, Mottoli's had a fabulous year. He won the best race of the year in the Met Mile before the Breeders' Cup, and became a Breeders' Cup champion. So what a fabulous year he's had. A lot to like in that respect, for sure. The short distance horses, Covfefe and Mottoli, thumbs up. I mean, what great years both of them had.
On that topic, before I bring up the Dean, Jerry Schottenkirk, in a minute, can Covfefe's season, can it overwhelm the 3-year-old filly division that went longer? You know, Serengeti and Dunbar Road.
Yeah, and Garana had a couple limited, you know, bright spots. I think it might, you know. I think it might, because she's popular, for one. Turf riders are a big block in this. You know, accessibility on the internet and Twitter influences turf riders. I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, there are a lot of fanboys and fangirls out there who talk amongst each other in the echo chamber that is Twitter, and really root for each other. And I think there's a lot of people who would like to see Covfefe win amongst the National Turf Riders Association. So I think she's going to get a strong percentage of that block. I don't know, you know, how the other places will vote, but I think she's popular. And popularity, this is a popularity contest. I mean, we're voting resumes, sure, but at the end, you know, when it's time to check off a ballot, would I like to see this horse win does influence a percentage of the voters. I don't know how large of a percentage, but it certainly influences some people, and she's very popular. So I think she's got a good chance to potentially be champion 3-year-old filly. And it wouldn't strictly be just based on popularity or anything like that. She's had a tremendous season.
Got a good resume.
And she's brilliant. So she's got both things in her. She's got both things in her category. She's got resume and popularity, and that's good in any election.
I referenced Jerry Schottenkirk, who in the Express Bet Breeders' Cup wagering guide handled the juvenile, and the prominence with which he pointed out Storm the Court, that had to have helped a lot of people who used the guide.
Well, and last year it was Nick Go at 70-1 who was Jerry's second pick in the race, and even in his wagering strategies worked him out to a huge exacta score last year with Game Winner. Now this year he used Storm the Court prominently in his wagers, but getting the rest of that exact to try super was pretty impossible to think that, you know, Dennis's Moment and Eight Rings wouldn't fire and be in the mix at all. So, yeah, I hope that it did really help people. But that's 2 years in a row. Jerry's put together, what, 70-1 and 45-1 horses?
How about that?
In the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And, you know, this is not a knock whatsoever. I've known Jerry since 1991-ish. And he's worked with me at Horse Player Now, and he was the handicapper at the Daily Oklahoman in Oklahoma City since the day Remington opened. But he's a fundamental, look at the paper, look at the horse's handicapper. No tricks, no fancy stuff, you know. I mean, he's not studying the workup. He's just kind of like a guy in the grandstand who grabs a form and knows what the hell he's looking at. He's a really good form handicapper. And so I think that to have guys like that in a lineup, you know, we have 14 different analysts looking at things. You know, Jeff Siegel's looking at a lot of the workout videos, and someone else may be looking at the thoroughbred sheets and all the other stuff. The lesson is there's a lot of good ways to skin a cat and a lot of good ways to handicap a horse. And Jerry does it old school, and he's as good as anybody. And I think that's a lesson to people out there who think, well, God, if I don't invest $80 in this product, or I don't spend my whole life trying to handicap, I just can't pick up a form and handicap. And that's not a degradation to his style whatsoever. And I want to really underscore that you can just look at a paper, look at a race, trust your instincts, trust your experience in handicapping, and come up with good horses. It's not all about marketing and sales.
Now, that folding in Nick's Go, that only further gilds his lily on the juvenile.
Yeah, you do it once, you pat somebody on the back, do it 2 years in a row at those kinds of prices.
That's tremendous,
in the same division. And that's kind of like, look, we do this with the wager guys. We try to match people up in divisions where we think they will do well. And that's kind of, and when they do well, we stay with them. You know, Jenny Reese, for years when she was working for the Courier Journal, was our distaff handicapper and was rattling off winner after winner after winner in the distaff division. And you keep that going. And you know, you had a lot of success. Declaration of War, I remember from a couple of years ago in the classic division, it was way up on your scale. And this year you had the winner with Vino Rosso. We try to put people in spots where they are really successful and where they can be best. We don't just try to flip people out into divisions and fill out the roster. So, you know, that's part of the lineup card, you know. I mean, if you're a Major League Baseball manager, who do you hit in the one hole, the three hole, the four hole? We try to strategize that. And hopefully we put people in the right places and, you know, because we don't have everybody do all 14 races. So we try to put them where they're strong, where they may have a regional ability or where they've shown a past affinity for doing well in a division. So, and look, and as you handicap, think of yourself the same way, you know. You don't have an entire team of handicappers, but you know what you do well. And if you know you're a good handicapper in two-year-old races, focus on two-year-old races. If you know you're terrible in turf sprints, stay the heck away from turf sprints, you know. Put yourself in the lineup in the right place. Because this is a hard game to win at, you know, so don't put yourself in bad position.
Yeah, good advice. Monday through Sunday, not just for big day Saturdays and Breeders' Cup, etc. And, of course, when we talk about the juveniles, it's hard not to immediately start to think about, you know, what lies ahead. They're still, you know, some good juvenile racing yet to come, including the Kentucky Jockey Club, and we got the Futurity at Los Al, Starlet, and more. You've got to be gearing up for another season of Countdown to the Crown. And while everybody was focused on Friday and Saturday, and particularly when it came to juveniles, we were tied in with. You mentioned Dennis's Moment and the ultimate winner here, Storm the Court, and everything that went on. Well, on Sunday, here was Independence Hall. We talked to Trombetta yesterday. We talked to Aaron Wellman last week, and he's got a vault up to the top of everybody's lists. What's your plan, and how quickly will we start talking about Countdown to the Crown?
Well, traditionally, it'd be the first Friday of the new year, so but I, you know, this is the kind of time where we really get into the research mode over the next 2 months. And, you know, we followed the races from, you know, from previous meets and what was going on. But the detailed list and putting together the big list and things like that will start now and research backwards. We use a lot of different resources, the BetMix.com database and a lot of race replays and things like that to dig back in and tear into this two-year-old crop going to three. You know, this will be the 15th year for Countdown to the Crown. It's been a package, as people who have followed have known, has combined both the review and the preview at the same time, which makes it a lengthy, bulky piece of material each year. I'm toying around with the idea and passing along some ideas amongst other friends and cohorts that I trust that, you know, maybe the format will change up this year a little bit and try to get the reviews out a little bit sooner in the week and then do the previews typically on Fridays as the package usually comes out. Things have changed in 15
That's a good
years.
Idea.
You know, this is the 15th year of Countdown, and at a time putting together a really nice PDF that was all together where everybody can keep it together and organize it and go back in week 7 and look at what happened in week 4 and have it all together was great. But there are ways on the internet to batch and put things together now and put it together. There's more people doing it too. I'll just be honest with you. You know, back when I started Countdown to the Crown, it was a resource that you really couldn't get anywhere else. Other people, you know, the copying is the sincerest form of flattery, as they say. There's a lot of people doing something similar now, and maybe they get it out a little earlier in the week and things like that. So we've got to be cognizant of what else is out there and try to still be the best at it. I think the material is as good or better than anything in the industry. I've always stood behind it in the work and the effort that goes into it. But, you know, timing matters, too, on the internet. You know, stuff that's 5 days old is really ancient these days. So we want to try to maybe change the format up a little bit this year, but I'm not 100% sure how that's going to look. But we've got 2 months to figure that out.
Well, and I'm sure you were as impressed with Independence Hall as anybody, but who are you keeping track of already that people might not know about?
Well, I mean, I don't know about not know about per se, but, you know, I think 'tis the law is the goods for Barkley. You know, really impressed by his first race and his stakes race. I think the idea of taking a shot at the Kentucky Jockey Club and then going into the winter, I think the timing is really smart on that. Because, you know, look, I think these guys want to come back in February, March, you know, with their first prep back. And if you do that in the Breeders' Cup on the 1st of November versus the end of the month, that's 3 months laid up in the summer, you know, and then you come back and your horse is coming off a 3 month break when they have to fire that first time back. I just think the timing works really good for him in the Kentucky Jockey Club. And I think that kind of maybe with what we saw at the Breeders' Cup, that puts him right near the head of the class. If he follows suit at Churchill and runs well, want to see what Maxfield has when he comes back, you know, after being scratched in the Breeders' Cup. I would have bet out on Maxfield in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile against Dennis's Moment, against all those horses. He would have been my best bet of the weekend. You know, so I that tells you that I have a lot of respect for him. But these horses have to develop in 2 to 3, and we'll see. As far as the under-the-radar horses go, I mean, again, that's where my research is really going to take off here in the next 2 months. That's what I'll be digging into. I can't give you a lot of names right now of horses that are just, you know, jumping off the page at me. I don't follow New York racing that closely because I just, to be honest, particularly don't care for it. So I don't follow it that closely on a day-to-day basis. So if you would tell me now, you know, that some horse ran 4 weeks ago in a really good maiden race at Belmont, I'll find out about it, but I don't know about it now. I don't follow New York on a day-to-day basis. So that's where the research has to come in, and then you catch up.
Well, Aaron, well, Jeremy, I'm looking forward to it as always. You got to be also, where are you with the night school season?
Well, we're finished now. The Breeders' Cup was our last, so season 9 of night school is complete, but all the archives are there. You can go back and check them out. This year we truncated it again. You've got to keep up with the internet, you know, so we took the 90-minute show. We tried to condense it down. It's about 25 minutes per episode. We gave more episodes this year, 20 of them versus 10, and made them shorter. So we're trying to adapt to user habits and the way that people consume content on the internet. So those are all there. Enjoy them throughout the course of the winter, and we'll look forward to a potential season 10 of Night School back in 2020. So all these things I'm doing, I must be getting old. It's 15 years for Countdown to the Crown, 10 years for Night School. Coming up in December, I think it's the first week of December, will be the 10-year anniversary of launching HorsePlayerNow.com. So some of these things have been going on a long time. I don't know. I'm going to have to come up with some new stuff soon.
Yeah, it remains interesting and informative. It helps people understand the game better and enjoy it more. That's what it's about.
Absolutely. And say, anybody who wants to check those out, go to horseplayernow.com. The night school links are there, and enjoy them. And some good racing at Remington still to go here for the fall, a track that I hold near and dear. Springboard Mile coming up in December. That'll be part of those 2-year-olds heading towards Oak Lawn and potentially Fairgrounds and the Mid-South region. And California has been coming in for that race too in recent years. So a good race to come up there yet, still on the calendar for the 2-year-olds in OKC.
Absolutely, and in fact, when a couple of weeks ago, I've been saving all kinds of charts from things that I hadn't gotten to while we were getting into Breeders' Cup mode, and I think it was the Clever Trevor, which leads in, right? And I've got it here somewhere. I want to say Asmussen, which wouldn't be a mammoth surprise, but I do have it here somewhere. Jeremy, I appreciate it. I know you got a conference call, but I will we'll catch up. We'll talk next week.
Okay, take care. Good luck, everybody.
Jeremy Blanc, Horse Player Now. Horse Player Now on Twitter and horseplayernow.com. Wanted to get his cup take as well, and I wanted to tip the cap to Jerry Schottenkirk, and I had no recollection that he had aced Nick's Go last year. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what Ben Goldberg's going to do. They tried him in the Commonwealth, that didn't work. I don't know. I'm sure it's been very frustrating. with him. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour here, and a visit coming from Nicole Russo, who's been so crazy busy and has been just a font of information regarding the November sales. And, of course, today, the Tuesday session, today's the 12th, right? Yeah, the 12th. They start with all kinds of stallion prospects get rolled into the mix today. So some very familiar horses that are being shopped and will change hands. And some will go on and continue to race, and others may end up standing either regionally or who knows. I also want to talk to her about the weanling market, which is seemingly... weanlings are the new yearlings. I don't know how to framework it, but the weanling prices are just through the roof. Nicole Russo, next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor is almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor and it's just awakening.
We're back at the races. 20 minutes to spend with Nicole Russo, and it probably is not going to be enough because Nicole has been churning out so much stuff about the sale. She's finding great topics, and you know, the sale schedule itself certainly leads to certain stories, but then the, you know, the narrative kind of writes its own script as well. And so you react to that. Nicole Russo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Before we start talking the November sale, both the Night of Stars at Phasig and what's going on at Keeneland, how was your cup? How was your Breeders' Cup?
You know, for me, it was gratifying, you know, certainly to see some horses, you know, finish off their campaigns and their careers with big wins. But, you know, I know we're all, you know, as an industry, sad and struggling with, you know, how things ended with Mongolian Saturday, you know, or Mongolian Groom, I'm sorry. But, you know, seeing some of these horses finish off their careers on such a high note, you know, Spencer Farm really won the Breeders' Cup. If you want to talk about things from a bloodstock perspective with, you know, the strong hand of Vino Rosso and Mattoli coming off Breeders' Cup victories and entering their stallion roster now.
Very much. And also second with, there was somebody else too. Who else? Somebody else hit the board.
Second with Omaha Beach.
Omaha Beach, that's right.
Of course, remains in training for the moment and is going to get, you know, another couple chances to bolster his resume before also, you know, being scheduled to enter stud there in 2020.
Exactly. A couple of the storylines that then immediately shifted to starting last Tuesday, a week ago tonight, of course, the Phasig sale, which also included the last responsibilities for Terrence Collier at Phasig Tipton. That was part of the Tuesday story. And then into the fortnight of activity at Keeneland. And it's, you know, it's a little bit of everything. It's mares. It's you know, racing broodmare or racing prospects. It's mares that are in foal and carrying a baby that might have attractive stallion associated with it. Then came the weanlings. And then today we kick off some racing prospects and some potential stallions that'll go through the ring.
Yeah, and, you know, that's interesting. The racing and stallion prospect segment of the market, which begins with, you know, today's closing hips, and they'll have a selection of them through the rest of the sale. You know, this is a segment of the market that's really grown in recent years. Graduates of this segment of the market include Diversify, who was purchased and went on to become a multiple grade one winner. Next Shares, who was purchased and went on to become a grade one winner. It's really, you know, an interesting segment of the marketplace. Certainly those two are examples of horses who, you know, have some racing viability left in them, but it's also become an important marketplace for regional and international programs looking to bolster their stallion prospects. And I think Keeneland's put together a really interesting cross-section of horses this year, led by, you know, you've got a multiple grade one winner in Annals of Time, who's being offered as a racing or stallion prospect as Clarovich Stables and William Lawrence wind down their partnership. You have a grade one winning juvenile from a couple of years ago in Sporting Chance, who's being offered as a stallion prospect. And you have Catapult, who's, you know, a multiple grade two winning millionaire and was second in the Breeders' Cup Mile last year. You know, they're all still on offer and set to be offered in the next couple of days here, adding some intrigue to the second week of this sale.
Boy, and there's some very notable names. You talk about Annals of Time and Sporting Chance and Catapult, but I see stake winners like New York Central and Projected, Timeline, American Anthem, Hot Springs, some very nice names. In fact,
then you also get people looking to kind of strike while the iron is hot on you know, on younger horses like Liam's Dream, who's a winning juvenile this year. They're running him through the sale, and that could be, you know, an interesting three-year-old prospect for someone to run next year. So you also, you know, you get kind of these seasoned horses who might be racing or stallion prospects, and then you get younger horses that really represent a racetrack opportunity for someone.
Exactly. And there's some very nice names in here. A lot of stake place types. Combatant just won a race this weekend, and I see he's in the sale.
Yeah, certainly, you know, the nature of these sales with the active horses, and we certainly saw that on the broodmare end as well, is that, you know, they're continuing to update their resumes as they approach the sale. And of course, you know, we saw that at the Night of the Stars at Fasig Tipton, as you mentioned, with Blue Prize and Belvoir Bay, you know, among the sale leaders off of their Breeders' Cup victories. So, you know, that's certainly the nature of this portion of the marketplace, too, is that horses are continuing to update their resumes as we come up on sale day.
You get into the broodmare prospects that changed hands, and there's probably two different storylines for you to riff on here, Nicole. Number one, you mentioned Blue Prize and Belvoir Bay. You know, certainly these sales invariably are heavily shopped by the Japanese bloodstock leaders, the Yoshidas and so forth. I mean, talk about who's going where and what you took away from, you know, the biggest names that went through the ring here over the last 6-7 days.
You know, both of these sales have had their usual strong cross section of domestic and international buyers. You know, as you mentioned, the Japanese contingent, always very strong. Eskimo Kisses, who sold, you know, very well here at Keeneland November, among the mares who will be headed to Japan. You know, again, we've had that cross section at the top of the marketplace, even some European buyers like the BBA Ireland, Coolmore, of course, and other outfits getting involved. But the two sale topping mares that we've kind of been focused on, Blue Prize and then Take Charge Brandy at Keeneland November, both went to domestic outfits, you know, although with different storylines. Blue Prize was picked up to lead the Fasig Tipton sale at $5 million by Larry Best, who's become such a big player, of course, buying the young horses, the yearlings, the two-year-olds, and racing and track. And he's, you know, really made no secret of his ambitions to someday develop a broodmare band. He said that as he's been buying, you know, expensive yearling fillies. Well, I looked at this fillies page, and this sire is an outstanding broodmare sire, and I'm looking down the line. And now he's coming in and buying, you know, older, you know, mares who are ready to begin their breeding careers right now, which will be the plan for Blue Prize. He said she's his third broodmare, so really a nascent broodmare band, so what a shot in the arm for him. And he says that he'll sit down and consult with some experts before deciding who she will go to for her first breeding in 2020. And then the next day to tap Keeneland November, another domestic buyer staying with Take Charge Brandy, champion two-year-old Billy carrying a foal from the first crop of Justify. She was sold as part of a liquidation of Elevage Bloodstock's broodmare assets, and that was really one of the storylines that dominated the top of the market at Keeneland November. John Sakura of Hillendale Farm and Craig Burnick of Glen Hill Farm head up Elevage Bloodstock. And John Sakura says there's no animosity at all between the two of them. This is not, you know, a parting of ways. It's rather that Elevage has decided to focus its interests, you know, back on its stallion portfolio and to kind of liquidate the broodmares and the young stock. And the fairest way to liquidate partnerships sometimes is to send horses through public auction, because then you can establish a fair market value, even if one of the partners winds up buying out the others and going home with the mare. And that was the case with Take Charge Brandy, who went right back home with John Sakura to Hillendale Farm. Craig Burnick did get in on, you know, some of the mares and weanlings, purchasing a couple of those. Hillendale purchased a couple of the others, and some of the others fetched high ticket prices from domestic and international buyers across the board. So really that Elevage liquidation helped fuel things on that first day at Keeneland.
Well, and that's one of the vagaries of the November sales in general. When you get a dispersal, you just don't know. And sometimes there's high profile dispersals, and they don't have to necessarily come only in November, but they can put the spurs to any sale. The story that I want you to really dig into, and you bring up Larry Best. Larry is part of it. The weanling market is out of control. It's weanlings are the new yearlings.
Well, I think that's almost exactly what it is, because we've had some notable weanling buyers over this past week of the mixed sales telling us, well, I'm coming in here and trying to purchase the weanlings because the yearling market has been so strong. I'm trying to get a leg up on the yearling market. So you have a lot of end users coming in and purchasing weanlings because they think, geez, the yearling market's going to be strong next year. And then they're competing with pinhookers who are saying, geez, the yearling market's going to be strong this year. I'm willing to stretch a little bit on this weanling to maybe turn around a good pinhook. So it's created, real competition for these young horses. You mentioned Larry Best. He's purchased the top two highest-priced weanlings at Keeneland November, a $775,000 filly by Curlin and a $750,000 colt by Curlin. Windstar Farm and China Horse Club also purchasing one of the high-ticket weanlings at Keeneland November, a $600,000 colt by Quality Road. The top-priced weanling over at Basic November, also reaching up into that $750,000 mark, a filly from the first crop of Gunrunner, as he's had outstanding results with his first offerings. So really, people are, it's a sign, it shows how these sales don't operate in a vacuum, because it's certainly a sign of confidence in another segment of the market, that yearling market, that's helping to drive this competition for, what are perceived as quality offerings.
Part of the weanling story, for me anyway, is the first crop weanling sires, and you mentioned Gunrunner, and right from the get-go on the Tuesday night on the first night, mm-hmm. and I brought it up the next day with Sid Fernando, and I'm sure we'll expand on it tomorrow when Sid visits, Nicole, but Mastery jumped off the page at me with those two, I think two that he sired from the Tuesday night, and then it's continued on, and he is sitting right in there with Arrogate and Gunrunner, but the difference is he's a third of the price from a cover, $25,000 for Mastery, and then the name that that caught my attention this morning, so much so that I reached out to Mark Cassie, had been on with me yesterday, and I said to Mark, the one thing I didn't ask him about was the reception that Classic Empire's babies are getting. Mastery and Classic Empire, Connect is connecting under the radar, mm-hmm. and so is Klimt.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you look at them and they're all from quality classic sire lines where, there's some supply and demand going on there, because, if you can't get in there and play for a Candy Ride or a Gunrunner, maybe you're going to play for Mastery, who was unbeaten, who was brilliant. We never got to see what he could truly do, who's from a very good female family, who got a very good first book. We know they're coming from quality mares, and you mentioned Mastery really connecting. Connect is a son of Curlin. Klimt, is a son of Quality Road. Classic Empire, he is a classic placed 2-year-old champion by Pioneer of the Nile, who obviously, sadly is no longer with us. And really some of these first season sires, capitalizing on those, they're really showing the next generation of that sire line. I think it's very interesting. Another one who's flying under the radar a bit is Practical Joke by Into Mischief. He was a very, he brings that speed that the American market is always so valued. He was a grade one winner at 2, trained on to be a grade one winner at 3. And, he was tough enough to go a little bit of a distance, when he was faced with it. So Practical Joke, I think, is he's a tremendous physical. I think he's really stamping his foals with the physical you expect from that sire line. He's a son of Into Mischief, and obviously Into Mischief's sons at stud, led by Golden Sense, are starting to come around. I think Practical Joke is another one of those who's, you know, who's flying under the radar. I think, you know, obviously Gunrunner and Arrogator at the head of this class, but this is a good competitive class. And really, as we've moved into the second week of the sale, this is when you start to see those first crop weanling sires taking a little bit more of a turn in the spotlight.
Well, and one thing that I think is also notable, mentioning Gunrunner and Arrogate, is the scarcity. The scarcity factor. Only three Arrogates that actually went through the ring. There were four others that were in the catalog that came out. And what that tells me is that it's the collector item scenario where people that went to Arrogate, they're going to hang on to these foals, and they're either going to wait and see. I guess there's two stories. Either they're going to wait and see, and that they might show better as yearlings, or they bred them and they're going to hang on to them, period.
Yeah, and, you know, many, many times people will enter almost their entire crop of young horses into a sale, you know, to keep their options open, and then, you know, decide as they get closer to the sale, I'm going to hang on to this one, I'm going to part with this one, you know, because the actual cataloging process takes place in advance several months prior to the sale, and especially with these young horses, they can develop at such a rapid rate. So really, I think, you know, it might be the case of people, you know, trying to keep their options open. But Arrogate at Judmont, you know, did breed something of a limited book by today's, you know, by today's standards. You know, Judmont is an operation that really tries to winnow down, you know, kind of the quality of mares going to their stallions. But we know Arrogate got an outstanding first book. Of course, he attracted Songbird and others from Mandy Pope's broodmare band, to say nothing of the support that he got from, you know, Judmont itself. And you see that in, you know, his top price at Keeneland November is a $415,000 filly who is a half-sister to Wavell Avenue, who is a Breeders' Cup winner. So you see that quality of mares in his book. You see the same with Gunrunner, you know, whose average is right up there as well among the leaders of this class. His top prices, you know, are fillies out of Pure Clan and Love and Pride, both grade one winners. So I think, you know, it's important to look at, you know, the quality of the mares behind a young stallion as well.
Speaking of mares, we'll close out this top line discussion of this first 8 days, essentially, of the November sales. And Nicole Russo with us, who does just an amazing job for the Daily Racing Form. Any clues, anything, any themes that you picked up on for the mares that sold while in foal?
Well, I mean, certainly this was, you know, really the first commercial test for Justify, and he came out firing with his first mares in foal from his first crop, and, you know, he's had seven-figure mares at both, you know, both at Phasing November and at Keeneland November. That's almost unheard of for a young sire. Of course, American Pharoah immediately comes to mind as the other first crop covering sire who's been so well received in recent years. And that's, you know, again, a testament to the quality of mares that were attracted to the young stallion, because the stallion can't do it all on his own. Justify's seven-figure lot at Phasing November was Diva Delight, the Dam of Midnight Basu, and a seven-figure lot at Keeneland November was Take Charge Brandy, who we mentioned in full to him from his first crop. And, you know, Justify so far is checking his boxes. You know, he came to stud with the race record and with, you know, that scarcity of his sire line, with Scat Daddy being another classic sire who unfortunately died young. So he came to stud, was given every opportunity, was one of the busiest stallions in the country based on the report of mares bred, you know, and is delivering so far with these first results in the sale ring. I'll be eager to see what his weanlings and yearlings look like in the next 2 years. And, you know, I have to mention Justify's, you know, barnmaid at Coolmore's Ashford Stud, Mendelson, another son of Scat Daddy, who showed, you know, the versatility of that sire line with all of his traveling and competing on many different surfaces. You know, and I think Mendelson's been very well received. And, you know, that's another case of, you know, same sire line at a different price point. And Mendelssohn was very popular as well. In fact, he and Justify were tied as the busiest stallions in the country on that report of mare's bred. So I think those two are going to be very interesting to watch in coming years.
There's so much that has already gone on that is just fascinating to anybody that follows the bloodstock market and the ebbs and flows. I thought it was notable the other day. I guess it was must have been Friday or Saturday. Mrs. Weber culling a couple of her prominent mares in Daveron and Slough Found Money and bringing in $1.1 million. You know, for two aging mares. And just in terms of how, you know, successful people in this industry manage their, you know, their stock, I thought that was a notable story that it got reported. But you know, picking and choosing, you know, once Charlotte gets you know, some fillies out of some of her brood mares, she'll then retain those and you know, take a little money off the table with the mares that are already productive.
Yeah, and, you know, every now and then you will see, a big program like a Live Oak or a Claiborne or a, you know, Fifth Family or a Jedmond, you know, say, hey, we need to diversify a little bit.
Yep.
We have a few daughters of this mare. There are only so many lines that, you know, will match with the stallions that we want to go to. We, you know, we need to diversify a little bit for the sake of the overall health of our program. And they will send those mares through the ring. And then that becomes a tremendous opportunity for someone else. And we're talking about, you know, big programs that are playing at this level, you know, Glenwood Farm, and of course, Clarkland Farm, which, you know, sold the $8.2 million filly out of Leslie's Lady in September. Both of those have had, you know, several outstanding seasons recently, and they're reinvesting a little bit in their broodmare bands right now. You know, they've both made some notable purchases at this sale. So, you know, it sort of goes both ways, and you see, it is fascinating to see how these programs that have been successful work as they, you know, alternately add to and reduce their broodmare bands for, you know, the overall health of their program.
Can't beat the coverage of Nicole Russo, DRF Russo, RUSSO, covering every aspect. And Nicole, well done. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Nicole Russo, who, top of her head. I mean, just so sharp. Amazing. And we'll be interested to see where some of these racers go today. Sporting Chance, Annals of Time, Catapult, more. And speaking of Sporting Chance, I see where Bravazo on his way back. I saw a note somewhere. Today flew by. I want to thank Nicole and Jeremy Plonk, Dr. Allday, Andy Serling, and Graham Motion. If you missed Graham, be sure to catch it on the replay or the archive on the stream. Good luck on your playing today, everybody. Back with you tomorrow, Wednesday at the races. Have a great day.